Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
Hey, you're listening to Real Nerds Podcast, hands down the best podcast in all of the internet, because every week we defy gravity by seeing a new film. This week, we saw Wicked. Stay tuned, where we'll recommend the film or not, play the trailer, then spoil the movie from a stage production that's 21 years old, and talk about the films we watch throughout the week. We love movies, and that's what we do. Surprisingly, I am joined by Brad.
That's surprising. Okay.
No, you're not the surprising part.
Aw.
You're the welcome part, because you're always there for me. And then I have people that just latch on for some random movies. Zach.
Hello.
And Corinne.
Hello, everybody.
So of all the movies that have come out this year, why are you two on the Wicked one? What's so special about Wicked?
Well, when it comes to movies that make it big at the box office, we know about popular.
I mean, ooh. I've tried to join for other episodes, and it just didn't work out timeline-wise.
I know. Well, even today, though, you said, oh, I'm free after 3, and then I sent out a thing. It's like, okay, 4. Oh, I can't do it then. So, I mean, who's really
well,
at fault
it'd
here?
Be nice to have more than 7 hours notice, Ryan.
7 hours?
People gotta work and shit.
People have to work?
On. Zach, don't interrupt me while I'm trying to make a point. No, because I sent you a text message, and I said, we're gonna do it on Saturday. You said, okay, anytime after 3, and I should be good. So I said 4. And then you're like, no, fuck you, I'm not doing it at 4. So, that's how it really went down. You're just like my wife. Why do women change the actual conversation we had to fit their narrative? Tell you, man, women.
You know, I didn't get to have a traditional Thanksgiving dinner with the bickering included, so this is as close as I'm going to get.
I'm just saying. I am just saying. Is there a reason, Corinne, is Wicked the stage production special to you?
Yes, I have seen it several times. I have owned the soundtrack for probably 20 years. Because I got a copy of it in like 7th or 8th grade from a friend of mine that she, you know, this was back when we had CDs, kids, you know, she ripped a CD version for me. And so it's been in my iTunes rotation since like 04, 05.
Very cool. And Zach, seriously, why is this one you wanted to be in on?
I really enjoyed the movie. And also, yeah, there's a lot of fun Easter egg stuff from a 1939 movie that nobody's heard of called The Wizard of Oz. So, thought it'd be fun to jump in with my 2 cents.
Brad, have you ever seen the stage production of Wicked?
Nope.
We have an outside... You know what's really... This might shock our listeners. I have seen Wicked in theaters, not movie theaters, in performance theaters 4 times.
Whoa.
I think you've seen it more than me, Ryan.
I like to think of myself as a diehard Galindian. What do they call him? I don't even know.
Look at Mr. Moneybags over here can afford 4 different shows from a Broadway musical.
No, it's Each time I actually, I don't think I've ever, I guess because I'm married, I technically have bought in tickets to them twice. But the other two times my girlfriend took me and I was like, okay, sure, I'll go. And
Did
then
you
I
get
don't
luck
think,
out?
when I saw it this last time was the first time, we were there and it was like super fans. I've never experienced that in the theater before. And I do like theater. I was in theater in high school and I do see plays at least once a year. And, I mean, there was kids dressed up as characters and, at the Denver Center for Performing Arts, they had macaroons. One were pink, one were green. They had specialty drinks and man, it was, people cheering and stuff for certain lines. And it was quite the experience this last time I saw it, which was, in like February or something like that.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
Wow.
I'm not surprised that you've seen it. I actually figured of the three of you that Brad would be the one who hadn't seen the stage show.
Yep, I
Yeah,
knew
no,
nothing about it.
I
Huh.
was,
So do you,
we
I'm
were supposed
curious,
to go
Brad,
to that show, but yeah.
do you know anything about what happens in Act or Part Two?
Nope.
Okay.
I mean, I have
Perfect.
theories. I know what the end is. I saw the original Wizard of Oz, but
Well,
so I'm
I'll
just.
be curious to hear your theories when we get into it.
All right, cool. So we'll go with the movie version. Zach, do you recommend Wicked Part One? And don't tell me it's
Yeah.
just because of the font at the beginning of the movie, okay?
Yes, it is probably the best font in a motion picture this year. Yeah, you should. This is a delightful, fun-fueled time. I do think that the way they end it so that we get into quote unquote Act Two next year was a satisfying enough character arc. I think the performances are astounding. The scale and the scope of this from the practical sets on down to the musical sequences is just remarkable. If there's a show that I would like, there's only been a few shows that I've like wish I had the money to go and see on stage, and now Wicked's gonna be added to that list of things to go see eventually. So yeah, I would definitely check it out. It's fantastic.
Corinne, do you recommend Wicked Part One?
I do. I mean, if you've seen the stage show, you probably enjoyed it. You've probably already seen the movie. But if you haven't seen the stage show, I would definitely recommend seeing the movie. I think it's a not like a lower entry point, but it's definitely more accessible, and they add in a few character beats that I think will help flesh everybody out for part two. Because I think of the stage show, act one is the stronger half. Act two starts to get a little messy. So I'm curious to see what they do with part two. But for the movie, yeah, it's like Zach said, it's very well made. It's definitely worth seeing on the big screen. So if you haven't seen it already, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, this movie is pretty fun. But Jack said the set pieces, especially in the library and stuff, I was like, holy shit, great job there. The reason I waited for Brad last is because Brad is new going into this. So I had my expectations. Brad, do you recommend Wicked Part One?
Did it have to be 2 hours long? Because yeah, I don't think it
It's
needed to
actually
be.
2 hours and 40 minutes long.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be two parts because I feel like there's a lot of just extra shit in this movie. Yeah, it moved my like molasses in between songs for me. And a lot of that stuff is pretty corny. But it is production design wise astounding. Some of the songs are pretty good. Well, like, the last one's pretty good. And that's like, and there's just like weird things, like logic things. I'm like, so Shiz University is like on the river and the, Elphaba is susceptible to water, but she seems to have no fears of going to school on a campus that's right by a river. So, yeah.
Interesting, Brad. Here's a trailer for Wicked, and I think part two might surprise you, but here's the trailer for part one.
Fellow Ozzyans, the Wicked Witch of the West is dead.
Don't let her get away!
Let me tell you the whole story. Our paths did cross. At school.
Unlimited.
You're green.
I am.
Together we're unlimited.
She had her secrets.
Absolutely remarkable.
There is no fight we cannot win.
Why is it you're always causing some sort of commotion?
I don't cause commotions, I am one. Some of us are just different.
Listen to me. You can do anything.
I
know.
Just follow the road.
It's gonna lead you right to me.
The best way to bring folks together is to give them a real good enemy.
This Wicked Witch.
Don't be afraid.
It's the wizard who should be afraid of me.
The wizard that there is or was is ever gonna bring me
down. So Brad touched on it a little bit in his cold-hearted review, because I don't know, Brad doesn't have one.
I hate everything. Hey,
Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. We just need to go find him a heart, and then we get me a brain, and Ryan, I mean, you've got
the Tin Man, so. Already had that. All those people already had those things.
But they didn't know about it until the wizard told them.
You know what's really fun, though? When I sit here and I listen to each one of us, that we've been doing this for so long,
mm-hmm.
everybody's initial review before we get into the spoilers and what's going on with the movie mm-hmm. is exactly how I knew it was going to go. Because, you know, Zach says, it's delightful and it's fun. And then Corinne likes it, except for. And Brad is, you know, whatever, bah humbug.
I do agree with Brad. I do think it's a little long, and I do have some problems with the pacing, but I wouldn't let that stop me from recommending it to other people.
No, I'm talking about how you don't like part two already, even though you haven't seen it.
I'm talking about the stage show, right?
I know what you're talking about. I'm just saying I'm not shocked.
Mommy and Daddy are fighting.
It's just how it goes, how I expect it to go, and no one surprises me anymore. People, I want surprises. I'm not getting them.
My pushback on the 2 hour and 40 minute thing is 2 points. Number one, superhero movies are 2 hours and 40 fucking minutes all the time, and nobody whines or complains. But number two, I do think that it allowed that universe to be bold and grow, because they're also pulling stuff from the books, I guess. So, and for myself, I can say that I did not feel the 2 hours and 40 minutes. It flew by for me. So
nope. That scene where they're in the bedroom, and I don't know, I've kind of forgotten most of the movie already because I saw it so long ago, but there's just like extended, like the shots, like the edits just last longer than you think they would. That whole thing of her and Glinda, I don't know, they're just hanging out and they're in the bedroom singing a little bit. And then like, Glinda comes out alone. It, like that whole, like this editing of that whole sequence is so slow. Like, you think the song's over and it just kind of like keeps going a little bit. It's just like, it's like, oh my God, you could speed this up.
So bad news, Brad, if you see the stage production, you're going to get that too. The stage production of Wicked is, I mean, the beats are, somewhat similar, where they'll sing a song and then they'll kind of have banter and then the song continues. I didn't have a problem with pacing. I'm in Zach's boat. It didn't drag for me at all. And because I have seen the stage show 4 times, it was kind of nice having a little more character beats with, the professor and the other animals and, mm-hmm. Moments with, the dynamic between, Michelle Yeoh's character and Elphaba is a lot different, in this version. It works though.
How long is the stage show?
What's up?
How long is the stage show?
The entire show is 2.5 hours.
So they crammed that whole story into one movie, really?
No, the second part. So,
is the stage show two parts?
The first half of the stage show, like everything up to Defying Gravity, is about 1 hour 20, 1 hour 30. And then the back half of the stage show, everything after Defying Gravity and the intermission, is about 1 hour.
So why is this movie this long?
They definitely added in a few scenes, but I think Ryan's right. I think that they just drew out a lot of the existing scenes.
Yeah, like they really stretched it out to get a 2-movie thing out of this. You know,
I think it works because it, like in the stage production. To Corinne's point, I mean, actually, I like the second part in the stage. It gets a lot darker. But just like in the stage, the intermission happens right after Defying Gravity, which is kind of unusual, where the big song and the iconic song from the musical is the one that breaks the intermission. But the song, I mean, it means so much to so many people. I've seen it and I've heard it so many times. And I mean, it's still a powerful song. But when that song was over with, and I mean, my wife was crying her eyes out, and she wasn't the only one. I was in a sold out theater, and everybody but me, because I'm a man, were crying. But you know, there's moments that I'll talk about later. But what works really well about the stage show and now the film is because everybody knows The Wizard of Oz so well. In fact, I mean, The Wizard of Oz is one of my most favorite films. But when I watched it recently, I forgot, because I didn't see it for about 10 years, The Wizard of Oz. But I forgot how well I know the beats of that film. Mm-hmm. You know, I know the cues. I know each performance so well. And it's always fun when something turns on it a little bit. Mm-hmm. I would never spoil a film for you, Brad. I would just say that in part two, you're going to get some explanations on some of the stuff of your preconceived ideas of The Wizard of Oz and the characters within it.
I'm pretty sure The Wizard of Oz is her dad, because that whole flashback sequence with her mom and that like dude who they hide his face and he looks a little bit like Jack Goldblum dancing around.
So it's that part too. So they actually fleshed out that part too at the beginning, with the nanny taking care of a young Elphaba that is really not touched on in the stage show. The stage show is built around a clock, which isn't really even mentioned very much in the film.
I'm Elphaba surprised that they didn't mention, because Elphaba really takes on this cause of, you know, helping the animals, but they never mention how in the movie how her nanny was a bear. You'd think that would play into it more. Like, I mean, she was practically raised by an animal in the best sense, right? That she was raised by a Dulcie bear, but she never explains to Professor Delamander or anybody like, oh yeah, like I really want to take up this cause because it hits so close to home for me.
Yeah, well, you do see her being the nanny, but it's never related, like, how important it was to her that that, you know, was her nanny.
Well, because that's a new addition to the movie. And
oh.
That Dulcie Bear was her nanny. So, yeah, I guess they didn't explain, they didn't elaborate on it very much because it was a new element in the movie.
Yeah, in the movie, uh-huh. when she brings the poppies in, and it's like suddenly it's like, oh, she's really into animals, like, I just found out this bitch is really into animals. What's going on here? Like,
I really enjoyed that poppy moment because I rewatched Wizard of Oz not too long prior, and I was like, oh, that's so lovely to watch the poppies put everybody to sleep.
The fact that Fiero was immune to the poppies kind of bothers me.
Yeah,
but I mean, I can't talk about it more without getting into spoilers.
is it possible that Jonathan Bailey is just so handsome that he's immune from it, like the Tin Man and the Scarecrow are in the original 39 movie, because they're handsome too. I don't know. Like, I don't know why they neglect that. Maybe they just they trust the audience to understand, oh, she was raised by a bear, so therefore, you know,
yeah,
obviously she'd want to take up the cause.
Yeah, I don't think it has to be spelled out to you. I mean,
that would be nice. I mean, so much of the dialogue is pulled directly from the stage show. It would have been nice to just have a few more new beats in there. I mean, they did, but they don't really tie in the new stuff to the existing stuff as well as they could have.
I don't know. I never had a problem with the logic of the movie.
speaking as somebody who's only ever heard the cast recording, and this was years ago, and blanking on it, and just really having only Wizard of Oz as the key reference point, I could see how hard of a job John Chu has as a director to please every audience, because he can't just think about Wicked audiences. He has to think about fans of the book, and he has to think about fans of the Wizard of Oz as a property that's been around for what, close to 100 years now, over 100 years now.
Definitely, yeah. Over 100. I think the book's 1912.
Yeah. So
1909, something around there.
Yeah.
So those small instances where there might be a logic gap, it's similar to how I felt about Dr. Sleep. It's very hard to people please when you've got a property that's so established in different forms that I think he kind of pulls off a very miraculous feat by not shoving nostalgia in your face, but laying it in properly amid the story that we are here to tell, which is Elphaba and Glinda, or Galinda. So I feel like all those little small instances where there's an issue, I feel like it's forgiven to me by the fact that he's juggling so many very complicated balls in the air and manages to land it pretty well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now every studio has their Wizard of Oz now.
Yeah. So,
the original Wizard of Oz book came out in 1900.
Mm. So it is 124 years old. So think about how many people you've got to please that are still living on this earth.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's about pleasing people. I think, you know, for obviously this film's already a runaway success.
Of course.
But the most important thing is this, because like I said, when I went to the showing of the stage production this year, there's diehard fans of this of this franchise.
Yep.
And I think that was the most important thing, because you're going to get people they're like, you know, the Marvel guys. They're going to go out and see it. Mm-hmm. And if it isn't good, then social media now, they're going to put out that you shouldn't see it. But right. I was reading a really interesting article on Variety about how Ryan Reynolds kind of started this with Deadpool and Wolverine, you know, the pirating of clips from the movie. And how Universal kind of backed off of shutting accounts down for putting scenes from the movie online.
Yeah.
And it's worked as a viral commercial. It's really fascinating. And so they're trying to play it out. And so I think the most important thing is pleasing the fans of the Wicked stage production.
Mm-hmm.
Lesser to the extent of the book, because I think when you think of Wicked, I think of, you know, Idina Menzel and
Chenoweth.
Yeah, thank you. I you know, that's what people relate to. So it's important to get that right, and you do that by, I mean, I'm gonna When we were leaving, I told Laura, I said, am I living in a world where Ariana Grande is going to win an Oscar? Because I really think she's going to.
She's definitely in the running. That's one of the best comic performances of the year. It's really, really funny.
Because, and you know, I will say too, what I really cherished about this film, more so than the stage production, which I adore, but they did keep beats of the characters better between Elphaba and Glinda. The scene where they're at the party and they're dancing.
Oh my God, that scene is, that's the one that made me cry.
That's the one that made me actually a really big fan of this film.
Mm.
Because when you're on stage, and if you've done any stage production, you have to be big because you have to play to a room mm-hmm. of, you know, hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. When you're on film, it's not about being big. It's about capturing the moments.
Yeah.
And
it's insular and not external.
The scene is Glinda gives, oh, she's still Glinda at this part. Glinda mm-hmm. gives Elphaba, you know, her hat that her grandmother made her because it's hideous. Mm-hmm. And it's the iconic Wicked Witch of the West hat.
Mm-hmm.
And she plays that as a joke. And when Elphaba shows up at this dance, she's wearing it and everybody makes fun of her. And Cynthia Erivo gives a performance
mm-hmm.
that is so fucking beautiful and powerful, where there's no music,
no dialogue,
in a musical, and she just dances.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I was thinking of Ariana Grande. I mean, she's funny. She can sing like a fucking angel, but her face and her reaction to how people were treating Elphaba is unbelievable. And how she goes out and starts dancing and they're both have those, you know, tears rolling down. It, to me, I think that is what sold this first part for me.
Yeah. It's
moments like that.
It's very powerful in a way that you're not expecting out of a very grandiose, in a lot of ways, ode to how bombastic an MGM musical would have gotten, which is another reason that I like it. That moment, though, is so it's something that can only be done through film. And there's a lot of moments in this film that extend off of what I'm assuming is in the stage play. But they do it in a way that, yes, only film can capture this. So it understands the cinematic heritage of this property and that there are things that now we are able to do because we are given this canvas rather than just being limited to that stage. But that moment, you know, like crop it to 4:3, put a sepia tone over it, and you've got yourself a moving silent film sequence. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So I always throw this out here now because, I mean, I hardly have other people on here. Brad, you've never seen the stage production. Did that scene do anything for you, or is it really slowly paced?
The dance scene?
Yeah.
It's nice, but like that whole time I was still kind of like in this ground of, you know, watching it, but also thinking about like trying to process what the story was even at this point of the movie. Like, you know, throughout the whole movie, I was thinking like, oh, this is a story like Professor X and Magneto. And then suddenly like there's maybe a love triangle maybe happening. And then I thought it only really got interesting by the end, which is, I guess, the halfway point of the story. So.
Like yeah. When they get to the Emerald City.
Oh God.
No, when she, basically like gets the broom and escapes and everything.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Like that whole, when she like, when, you know, realizes that the, Oz Great and Powerful isn't all that great and powerful.
Oh God.
Callback.
Can we please talk about the man behind the curtain himself, Jeff Goldblum, for a minute? It is very hard to top what Frank Morgan did in 1939, and Jeff Goldblum very much succeeds at matching it with his own version of what the Wizards is. That moment where he literally does go behind the curtain and shatter dances made me cry. It's friggin' brilliant. His take on the Wizard is fantastic. And I loved learning that the fake robot head that he uses for the illusion of the Wizard that there's a good chunk of that that's a practical effect. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, they spent money to build this head. This is fantastic.
That's from the stage show, I think.
Yeah.
Really? Down to the design.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's cool then to hear that. I'm glad that they actually built it though and didn't try to just only gussy it up with CGI. Like that, like looking at footage of that head actually maneuvering and cranking. I'm like, that's fucking cool, man.
Yeah,
the only problem is he's not the best singer, but I would agree. I think he gives a pretty good performance, and I'm curious to see what he's going to do in Act Two or Part Two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just watched. There's a new Family Guy. It's totally off topic, not really, but kind of special on Hulu, uh-huh. And they have this bit about Jeff Goldblum about explaining the white elephant gift exchange to Peter and his coworkers, really? And. The dude who does Jeff Goldblum in it nails it. It comes out, he's like, "Hi, I'm Jeff Goldblum, and I'm here to talk about white elephant." White elephant? Huh. That's weird. And then it cuts to Peter, and he goes, "Yeah, that went on for like 4 hours. It's like the most spot on impression and who Jeff Goldblum is. It was brilliant.
That's funny.
Yeah. So yeah, it's.
I mean, he definitely sells it as. Like, you really want to believe that he's sincere. And
yeah.
So when you find out, as Elphaba does, that he's really not trustworthy and not who he says he is, and that he wants to, you know, control Oz with, you know, all the flying monkeys, you're like, oh, shit. You know, it really does feel a little, well, not even a little, it feels disappointing and upsetting because you're like, oh, mm-hmm. This guy I thought I could trust is not to be trusted.
You know what's funny about the flying monkeys is that it's so ingrained in our heads from that original film, and it's something that scared a whole generation of kids who watch it for the first time. The look of those flying monkeys is terrifying. I loved how John Chu said, "I need to kind of try that in this go around," and the sequences of the monkeys flying through and attacking the building was just, it was some nice little fast momentum tension. I'm like, oh Jesus, these things aren't messing around. And the showing the transformation was its own little form of like, man, this is PG-13. This seems like this shouldn't be happening in this movie right now.
I actually saw the movie twice, and I can tell you on the second go around, I knew what they were doing from the beginning, but I think on the second time I saw the movie, I could really tell from the performances that both Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Yeoh's characters were like, they were playing her. They set her up from the beginning with the whole, oh, wouldn't it be so great if they could fly? And, you know, it's subtle enough that you don't catch it until the second time.
Yeah. The only character, by the way, you mentioned Michelle Yeoh, like the Madame Morrible character. Like, I'm assuming that in part two, more of her chicanery will be revealed because, like, I could definitely tell something's up, but it didn't really fully set in for me until about halfway through, when I'm going like, oh wait, why is she taking forever to write to this wizard from Nebraska? Oh, she's conning them somehow.
She's in it. I mean, this, I'm just talking about the stage show. She is in it. She's not in it too much, but she does play a crucial role in what happens.
Gotcha.
And there's, oh my gosh, this is just, part one is just foreshadowing the movie, not only for Wicked part two, but also for The Wizard of Oz. As I mean, if you've seen The Wizard of Oz, you probably caught like the silver slippers and things like that. But if you know what happens in Act Two of this Wicked stage show, then there are some other little Easter eggs and things that people do that only make sense if you know what happens.
Knowing now that Nessa is in a wheelchair makes what I believe is going to happen in part two all the more tragic. Because I know what the slippers do and where they end up. That was one where I'm like, I don't need to read a spoiler. I know what happens at the beginning of that original movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, Dorothy Hamilton comes out and says, "Have you seen my sister?"
By the way, this also, all the anticipation and praise around this film was a good excuse to remind myself, like, yeah, Margaret Hamilton was great as the Wicked Witch in the original movie. She is great in that movie. I can't think of any reason why somebody wouldn't want to watch this. I mean, I guess if you don't like joy, then I guess this movie is not for you. But if you do like Joy, which is, I'm assuming, a good chunk of the public right now, then yeah, I'd say go ahead and check it out.
I mean, if people don't like musicals, they shouldn't watch it, because this is definitely a musical. It is like musical to musical.
Yeah, and it has no shame about being a musical. I really do adore that they gave him the appropriate amount of money and budget to make a traditional film musical as loud and proud on it as you would expect and want it to be as a fan of any stage show. It does a lot of things that not every film musical manages to do when they're trying to translate it to cinema. And I really appreciate the scale and the scope that they were able to give it without, like, there's CGI in this movie, obviously, there has to be, but like the flourishes are minimal. They're interacting with their environment. It just looks fantastic. It's very much that old MGM touch that does, when it works, it really, really works.
I agree. It really did feel like they took advantage of the medium of film, not just like, oh, we're just going to film this, you know, ground level, just basically like act out the stage show, but just on like on a studio lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is cinematic. Mm-hmm. The sets, the costumes, the way the camera moves, there's the different set pieces you guys were talking about, like the rotating library shelves and Dancing Through Life. Oh. I think there's like a tracking shot in One Short Day in the Emerald City that, you know, where you see like the whole set in one go.
Yeah.
Oh, we haven't talked about the cameos yet.
The cameo that I'm assuming this happened in other people's theaters where you heard some gasps and some, oh my gods.
Yep.
Yeah. Seeing them do a bit in the movie was absolutely fantastic. Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel, everybody.
I think I cried both times I saw it during that scene.
Yeah.
Like seeing the Glindas and the Elphabas together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that brought a tear to my eye.
They kept that a secret. They kept that a really good secret because I had no indication.
I mean, I didn't know, but I figured they were going to be in it. I mean, why wouldn't they be? They've both been in films before. They've both been in film musicals before, so yeah, why wouldn't they be and have a cameo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Idina Menzel's musical performance in Uncut Gems is absolutely fantastic. I'm kidding. I know she's in Frozen.
So if you live in Oz, do you like have to watch that skit every day? Do you think? Like every time someone new shows up, they gotta like, all right, get the welcoming backstory play together.
it's like all those little like tourist guide songs that play in Farquaad's Kingdom and Shrek.
we're doing this backstory at 3, 5, and 7.
The giant projection of the wizard coming down and just saying Omaha over and over again. It's like, how many times a day do I have to put up with this shit?
Remember, Brad, you suspend your belief and enjoy the magic of music. I don't know.
Yeah, I've got a great answer for you, Brad. None of it's real. That's how.
So, yeah, Brad, what part in this whose film dream made is you this? Cry?
What part
of Wicked made you cry, Brad?
When I saw the title card say part one.
That was at the beginning. Yep. I did have multiple people, both the second and the first time I saw it, when the "to be continued" came up, they said, "Motherfucker."
I'd be pissed too. So does part two explain why Elphaba like water kills her?
Yes, it does.
Don't ask Corinne. She's going to spoil things for you, Brad. You're going to have to watch part two to see.
Yes or no.
they explain
what happens. Yes, okay. They do.
Did they explain it in this movie? Because it didn't occur to me until after, like days later, that Madame Marvel holds an umbrella over her when the rainstorm happens. I'm like, how does she know that she's susceptible to, like, did I miss something?
No, I think you're going on your previous knowledge of how she dies in the film.
Oh.
That was a new scene that they added for the movie.
Yeah, so, probably because like, people like me sitting in the audience like, why is this chick going to school near a river? She's going to die.
Brad, I can answer it for you in another way. This ain't your grandma's Wizard of Oz. I don't know. I'm sure we'll find out answers in part two.
Part two, so there's a lot of dangling plot threads in part one. Part two ties it all up.
I would hope so, yeah.
The question I have is, who is playing Dorothy in the movie? Who's going to play Dorothy?
I think they've already cast. I mean, they've already filmed part two.
I know, but they're keeping that a close secret too. I'm like, everybody's been cast. I already know where certain characters are going based off of cast listing.
Yeah, Dorothy doesn't play a big part in the stage show. She's kind of just in the background.
Oh. CGI, a la Peter Cushing, CGI Judy Garland back into the movie.
I think they had an actress that attended the part one premiere, and people were speculating it was her based on her attire, that she was wearing like silver shoes. And she has like the right look to play Dorothy, but I don't know who it was.
Ooh, Ryan, let's get Liza Minnelli to do it.
Only if she goes there with her new husband, Mr. Bluth. That's all I want to see.
And she's still wearing her costume from Cabaret.
Yeah, just have Buster Bluth there, then we're good.
Oh my God, he could play. He could play a fifth in the group. what, the Claw Man, the Tin Man, Scarecrow, Cowardly Lion, and Claw Man.
Any Arrested Development fans out there? Anybody?
And then at one point he could turn to the camera and go, "I'm a monster."
So Zach and Brad, I'm curious. Do you guys have any predictions for part two? Anything or any theories?
I have a theory that they're going to use Elphaba as a propaganda tool to turn her into a fear icon. And what I want to happen won't happen, which is that they use footage from the original Wizard of Oz movie as if it was made as a propaganda film for the Land of Oz.
Don't put it past them.
I mean, it'd be really, if they did that, I'd probably die in my seat laughing with joy.
You'd have to get the rights though, because that's MGM, isn't it?
I mean, look how much of the set design is clearly an extension and or riff on that original musical. So I think they've got to have some kind of arrangement where they can license the clips, because there is a licensing department for a reason. There's Warner Brothers movies that have SpongeBob clips in there, and I know Warner Brothers don't own that.
Yeah.
I think Wizard of Oz is a little complicated, though, because it was produced by MGM, but I'm pretty sure Warner Brothers owns the rights to the movie.
Oh, yeah. Warner owns the rights. MGM's got nothing to do with it anymore.
And Brad already said that he thinks that the wizard is Elphaba's biological father.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, the man that was dancing with her clearly looked like a vaudevillian charlatan, so I think that's also the case.
That's the old villain from Superman serials, the vaudevillian charlatan.
I'm going to kill you, but right after the 3 o'clock performance.
His cane is dipped in kryptonite.
He's got the hook, but instead of hooking people off stage, he just hooks people and kills them. That's vaudevillian charlatan, ladies and gentlemen.
Any closing comments about Wicked that we haven't touched on?
Dwarf's got to be pretty bummed about the fewer opportunities to work in Hollywood. I'm sure every time they hear like, oh, there's going to be a Wizard of Oz remake, they're just like, oh, we're going to use CGI.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Or not dwarf people. That's just like, son of a bitch. Like,
I don't know like what the decision making is in like moving away from that, because you know, like the idea of using little people might have been more of a like MGM concept from back in the day that doesn't necessarily indicate you have to do that. But I agree, it would be nice if there was like a huge moment for little people actors to be in it, but obviously they made the decision for a reason that means something to them, so.
Why can't we just have the Lollipop Guild around? You know what I mean?
You know why I want the Lollipop Guild around, Ryan? Because then that means Harry Earls is still alive, which means they can reboot the movie Freaks. And I would not recommend they do that, but I'm just saying that's a possibility if that world existed.
You know, you don't have to use little people. You just use like a bunch of kids with a Brooklyn accent and, you know, their cheeks painted rosy red. That's all I want.
But I like at the end of the day that they weren't trying to necessarily lean into every single element that was ever existing in cinematic Oz iterations. So, but also like there is an element of they people might feel demeaned if we're just that's the only opportunity that's being presented for little people actors. Like it's a difficult situation.
Inverse of that is the new Snow White film coming out. They use CGI dwarfs. So I don't know what's worse.
I think it's incumbent on asking actual little people performers what they themselves prefer and what they would want to do.
Yeah.
It's not our decision to make at all by any means.
Maybe I don't know. And like the original Munchkin portrayals are actually demeaning, but yeah, it's just weird that like, you know, it's sad to me to see that kind of like erasure of like, you know, they don't get a lot of parts as like starring parts as is. And now it's just like, yeah, we're going to take these away from you too.
You know what? People can look up though, if they want to see like how beloved those little people performers were in 39. I don't know if it's online, but it's definitely on one of the Blu-rays for Wizard of Oz talk. There's a little featurette that talks about getting them a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And they interviewed the remaining, those who were still alive. And I think Jerry Marin was still kicking around at this point. So he's part of that. Along with the coroner and other people from the Lullaby League, I think, that were, their memories of it were so pure and fond that you do like your heart sings when you get to see them getting the accolades all these years later, because none of them were credited individually back in 1939. And it's only because fans gave a shit that we found out who pretty much each and every one of them were. And yeah, Harry Earls from the movie Freaks is the one on the right, I think. And Jerry Marin's the one who gives Dorothy the lollipop. So anyway, sorry, long tangent. Just, yeah.
Yeah, save it for your Ballyhoo podcast, nerd.
I will.
I just want to add that the movie soundtrack is fantastic. I've been listening to a lot of the, you know, the cast's version of these songs, and they're spectacular. So I went to the first time I saw it, I went with my friend Krista, and we're both big fans of the stage show. And we came out and we were like, they did it right. They did the movie and the songs justice. So happy to report it. Oh, side note, Ryan, you will probably be most interested in this, but the creators have confirmed that there will be two new songs in Wicked Part 2.
I figure they're going to have to push it a little bit because the second half of the stage show is maybe an hour long. Because the second part goes by really fast when you see it in the theater.
Maybe it'll be a song about how Brad's mean and doesn't like Joy.
Well, also, you know, best original song Oscar nomination, pretty much.
Ah, that's how they get you, you see. That's how they get you.
They did the same thing with Les Mis like 10 years ago.
They did it with the producers, and sadly it didn't work. But I'm the only one who enjoys that remake, so what the hell do I know?
Wait, you like the movie Les Mis?
No, the producers. I'm not a big fan of Les. No. The producer's 2005 film that gets shit on all the time. I like that one. Les Mis, I'm not a huge fan of. I order rewatch. Sorry if my opinion bothers people.
No. Hey, Tim Hooper, back the camera up, okay?
It's okay to like a movie. Now, having said that, I wasn't a fan of that movie.
Now, that's a, you know, excruciatingly long musical. I mean, it's in the title. It's The Miserables. Hey,
man, the fact that you can speak French sometimes comes in handy for random jokes.
I do what I can.
You should just do an American version of Les Mis, just call it The Miserables, and then just market it as if though it was a fantastic 2000s comedy.
So I like to hear. This is the big news story of the week.
It's real news.
Really not much news, But I'm just curious because Corinne loves the films How to Train Your Dragon, and they released a live action trailer for the film coming out next year. And I've been reading that people aren't happy because it's just basically shots from the animated film and it was unnecessary. Corinne, how do you feel about one of your favorite series getting a live action adaptation?
Wait, how am I the only person who likes this movie? You guys don't like How to Train Your Dragon?
I haven't seen them. I like that first one just fine. James is the is also the big nerd in the building for that one too. So we should just have him call in too.
I think they're fun. They're just, you know, they're fun movies.
I never saw the second or the third, so I couldn't comment on the trilogy. Yeah, no, the first one was good. It was good.
I think it's weird to take like
cute little dragon,
a CGI character, and then just make it like a more detailed CGI character.
Yeah, it's
someone posted
the fact that
someone
it's the exact same shot, like the angles, the look, everything. It really just looks like a shot for shot remake, but just live action.
I was happy that Gerard Butler was asked to come back to play the role he voiced. That's cool.
It'd be a good test.
I wonder
for,
if they're going to do the same thing with Craig Ferguson.
Brad, you were saying before you've been interrupted twice.
I was gonna say this will be a good test for all the audience members who like complain when movies are remade and they're different from the original. So if this one's shot for shot exactly the same, but just, you know, more detail, and they don't like it, then yeah, I don't know what the fuck you want.
Even the same director.
You know what it would, you know what might clinch the deal and make sure it's really good. You get Tom Hanks in there to play a fake Italian. That might really help the movie.
Tom Hanks. Everything he says is funny.
Oh God, I don't want to say the line, but I know the line.
Yeah, I'm not excited about it. It sounds like the studio was gung ho on making this. I've heard rumors that it's because they want to turn it into like a theme park or like a theme park ride or something. So,
well, they are opening up a How to Train Your Dragon Land in Orlando, Florida, at Universal Studios. It's opening in May of 2025.
Is that because where dragons live?
So basically, this is just a giant promo for the park, I guess.
No, I mean, you don't see any value in making like a gritty fantasy live action version of it.
Why does it have to be gritty? It's supposed to be like a fun family action adventure.
Because that's what you young whippersnappers like when things are dark.
Ryan, are you saying David S. Goyer wrote this? Is that why you're telling us?
Yeah.
Yeah, what if How to Train Your Dragon was set in the city of Chicago?
No, it seems very unnecessary, and it sounds like the studio was dead set on making it, and the director of the original animated version was like, well, they're going to do it with or without me, so at least if I direct it, maybe it'll turn out okay.
I think they're trying to go down a road that Disney's already been going down and realizing that it doesn't always hit. And that's concerning given how much money they might have spent on producing it.
Well, maybe it'll be really good. If they have the same people involved, maybe it'll be good.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. I remember seeing the trailer for during Wicked, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Gerard Butler's there. Nice. Maybe I'll go.
I think it would only succeed if it separated itself from the source material enough to feel like its own movie. And I just don't see it doing that. If it's going to be basically a shot for shot remake of the animated version, it's like, that's a movie that already exists. Mm-hmm. So why bother?
Yeah.
We watch films throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Corinne, what'd you watch this week?
Oh, goodness. Have you guys played any of the showtimes I've sent in lately about, like, Conclave or Wild Robot or anything like that?
Those are on episodes that, there seems to be a problem with uploading our episodes for the last 3 weeks, so.
Yeah, it's me.
Okay.
I'm the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, Brad's the problem. I was just being nice.
At tea time, everybody agrees.
I just wanted to make sure that they get covered somehow. People, the folks at home know that Conclave, Wild Robot, Transformers 1, they're all fantastic movies. I highly recommend them. But as for this week, I have been watching the new NBC comedy St. Denis Medical. It's only like 3 or 4 episodes in right now. It's still a little rough around the edges, but I think they've got potential to make the series work long term.
I see a lot of the same Sunny spinoff. Is this an Always Sunny?
No, it's
Philadelphia,
it's like a
spinoff.
No.
Dennis Medical.
No. This is it's set at a hospital in Oregon. It's basically like The Office or Abbott Elementary, but just with medical personnel. And
this looks like Grubs, but for a new generation.
Yeah. It's in that like mockumentary style. And no, but it's funny you mentioned that, Brad, because they are going to be doing a crossover episode between Abbott Elementary and It's Always Sunny. Like the Always Sunny crew is going to be on Abbott Elementary. I think that comes out in January.
Please tell me Dennis is going to teach the kids the Dennis system. That's all I want to know.
I really hope not. I don't know how this is going to work. I've never seen It's Always Sunny, but from what I've heard from people online, they're like, yeah, none of those people should be anywhere within 500 feet of a school.
No, the you should watch It's Always Sunny. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant show.
It's the crossover because they have the same producers.
It's because they're both set in Philadelphia. I don't know if the cast and crew is any crossover.
Still, like there's other shows set in Philadelphia. It's just like, I don't know why these two are paired up.
Somebody must know someone. Yeah. I don't know.
Same parent company,
I mean,
at least,
I think it's going to be funny seeing Charlie mingle with kids. I just watched the episode a couple nights ago where they go to the Italian swap meet, and Charlie's never had a pear. So he eats a pear, and then it cuts to Mac, and he's talking to the guy trying to haggle the price. And it cuts back to Charlie, and he goes, dude, did you eat that whole pear? He's like, yeah, I ate it all. It's pretty gross. He said, you ate the core? He's like, yeah, and the stickers on it, dude. It's so fucking funny. Oh, well. If you haven't seen it, you should watch It's Always Sunny.
But, yeah, so I guess check out St. Denis Medical. It's on NBC. That's pretty much all I've been watching. I mean, it's been the holidays, so. I mean, we're going to talk about Gladiator 2 and Moana 2 at another time, I'm imagining.
Yes. Okay. Gladiator 2 is our film of the week next week.
Cool. So I'll save talking about that for another time.
Zach, what'd you watch this week?
I actually got to, it's been a dry spell on my end for the theaters. So I caught up a bunch prior to Wicked with some releases I'd been meaning to see. I saw 3 films. I'll be quick about them. I saw Anora. I really enjoyed it. Henry had a really good review about it where he said it's secretly a Three Stooges movie. And I'm like, yeah, kind of is. Mikey Madison's fantastic in that film. There's real genuine screwball comedy nonsense that's being honed in on that film that's absolutely fantastic. And this is the first Sean Baker thing I've ever seen. So if this is how fun he can be, I want more of the other stuff he's done then. And then I saw Conclave. I enjoyed that Pope fiction, if you will.
You did not just say Pope fiction.
He's saying fiction. That because I liked it on his letterbox.
I know. Yeah.
Give him all the power. It is a good pun.
Yeah. Thank
you. I've seen the movie.
Yeah. I'm actually, like, in all seriousness, I enjoy weird thrillers of this kind of a nature, even especially if they're like have a religious bent to them. And the idea of watching basically an election drama unfold through the papacy was interesting. I do think it kind of it meanders a little bit at times, trying to be relevant to anything current or even like contemporary.
Especially when they start arguing about how you say a Big Mac in Italian. I mean, what's that about?
that would have been a great addition with Ray Fiennes talking about that in the movie. Sadly, we did not get that. Yeah, I mean, like, apart from modern day illusion where they're really trying to hammer home a metaphor, I think that the film works as a very nice ticking clock kind of a suspense drama. It's really cool to watch everything unfold. It's a really good, like, mid-budget film that you would have seen in the 90s or 2000s. I think everybody gives great performances across the board with it. The twist is something that was the cherry on top of a movie that already had a bunch of twists. And something that I really like about this film and why I ended up giving it 5 stars is, as it's doing all of this stuff and it's juggling all these balls in the air, trying to hit. Yeah, you like the word balls, don't you, Brad? As they're trying to do all of these different twists and turns and make it relevant and, oh, we've got to have an allegory for current times that we're living in, whatever. This film score has no bones about being melodramatic as sin. And I really like it. Ha ha ha. Like every time there's a major revelation, the score just kicks up and it's melodrama to a T. And I really enjoyed that it was confident in its ability to do that. So when you finally get to the twist at the end, it's just this cherry on top. It's a twist that I can see why some people in the Catholic faith would have a problem with it. But I've talked to one of my friends who is a priest, about this film, and she loved it. And I told her, I'm like, what this film is great at is talking about the concept of faith while deconstructing the more human side of what this construct of Catholicism is. And it's a very solid little thriller. I really recommend people check it out.
Does the score use a pianist? Giggity.
All right.
Man, we're just reveling in Family Guy today here, aren't we? And then last thing I saw was Heretic, which I really, really dug. I want Hugh Grant to win his Oscar for this movie for the sole purpose of, has anybody here not seen Heretic yet?
I have not.
You have not? Okay.
Brad, I haven't, obviously, but I don't care.
But you like Hugh Grant, so you'd like this movie. It's great.
It's a horror movie. I'm not going to see it.
Yeah, got it. Yeah. I will say this. I really liked the movie. I don't know if it hits every horror beat I would like it to, but I think it does a very effective job at building up tension, in the first act that I'm on board for whatever the remainder of the story is. The twist is kind of like a mile away. You can see it, but I think the way they play the exercise, that Hugh Grant's character is implementing is interesting to watch. But Brad, the reason I want him to win the Oscar is because when he's doing his whole spiel about the breakdown of religion and he brings up a certain movie in the dialogue.
No.
I have seen that clip out of context on Twitter and it is hilarious.
That's why I want him to win the Oscar, because when that line of dialogue hit, I was like, the fuck did you just say? This is great. Oh my God. 20 Oscars to Hugh Grant. Ryan, when you watch the film, report back to me and we'll giggle about it. But it's only a
horror movie if you think being an atheist is horrific.
I don't know. I didn't really see any marketing for it, but just from like the title and the poster, I just figured it was a horror movie.
It's funny. My girlfriend showed me a whole breakdown of a Mormon who used to be in the Mormon church, and she broke down how authentic and accurate it is and how good it is at portraying the service that they're basically going through at the beginning of the movie and whatnot. Like, it was fascinating. It bumped up the film a little bit for me, because I'm like, man, they did a really good job at portraying it on screen. It's fascinating. Those three films, all solid recommends. Go check them out.
Brad, what did you watch this week?
I have no idea where I left off. I've seen a bunch of stuff, but I'm going to guess I didn't talk about Fatal Instinct last time.
You did not?
Yeah. I was playing at the Alamo. If you don't know what Fatal Instinct is, it is a parody movie of that era of movies, the erotic thriller, I guess.
Loaded Weapon 1 did it way better.
This one's directed by Carl Reiner, of all people. And it's actually got some pretty good gags in it. You know, the material they're lampooning isn't like that great, you know, as a source, but Armand Asante playing like the typical, and like it's really not just that, it's also kind of an homage to just film noir in general movies. Mm-hmm. So Armand Asante playing like the typical like detective lead, and he's not even like a detective in the movie, he's like a lawyer and like sort of detective.
He's your normal guy caught up in an unreasonable situation kind of thing.
Yeah. But like my frame of reference for him is just the Judge Dredd's brother in Stallone's Judge Dredd. So like this is like a completely 180 performance. So I was like, damn, like this guy should make more movies like this. But yeah, it's got some good, like, just, you know, Zucker Brothers style gags in it. But like through the lens of Carl Reiner, I guess.
I've never seen it, but on a if you were to compare it to Reiner's other noir homage, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, would it hold up or would it not be as fun?
I haven't seen it. Can't compare.
Okay. Yeah. You'd like that. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
It's funny. Yeah, Fatal Instinct's a fun movie. I just like Loaded Weapon 1 more because it's a little more silly, but...
Yeah. Yeah, there's like parts in this like they do drag a bit story wise because it pivots all over the place, just like chasing every little silly thing. But yeah, like those other ones, like they're very much like they stick to just like we're only doing these gags so they relate to like these movies. This one's just kind of like all over the place, you know?
Yeah.
It's like almost like there's not enough material in Basic Instinct and Fatal Attraction to mine, so they just like drag all this other stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I also watched A Real Pain, which is the blanking on his name right now.
Jesse Eisenberg, Roy Culkin.
Yeah, that movie where they are cousins who take a trip to a Holocaust tour, and Kieran Culkin's got some baggage, emotional baggage that he's dealing with, and Jesse Eisenberg is just kind of like apologizing to everyone for his behavior and being a real pain. And then you kind of just, you know, the layers of onion come off and you find out like why he's all damaged and hurt. And yeah, it's just, I think it's just like an interesting movie to watch. And it's like really small and simple. And actually seeing like the Holocaust camps.
He directed that too, right?
Yeah. And then seeing like the Holocaust camps without like any kind of like historical, you know, veneer on them, you know, it's not like watching like, hey, we dress this up for like Schindler's List. It's just like modern day, you know, as is, like what these places look like. That was pretty haunting.
That's the second film within the span of 2 years to show imagery like that, because there's that in The Zone of Interest.
Yeah, well, The Zone of Interest is like made for that time period.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
still like stylized. Mm-hmm. But this is like, looks like, oh, if you just walked on it today, this is what you'd experience, you know? Mm. And like the worst part is like the walls have like this blue, these blue streaks on it, because that's like where the gas is like oxidized from the use of it, and they haven't like cleaned it off. Yeah. So, and then I think I'll save The Penguin for next week.
Cool. I only watched one movie this week. I've been, I don't know, playing games or setting up my house. I don't know. I've been not watching as many films as I used to do. But the movie I watched, the Scream Factory put out The Wolfman with Emily Blunt on 4K. And the only way you could get the really cool slipcover is if you order it off their website, and you have to have $50 for free shipping. So to do that, I had to find one other movie. And so I picked their Scream Factory online exclusive of Attack of the Crab Monsters, which if you're like going, wow, is it that on the head? Yeah, it is. It's a Roger Corman film that he wrote and directed. And it's about these group of scientists, and they go to this island that the nuclear tests were happening at. And because they did that, giant crabs show up and kill people. And what I really loved about this film is, you know, Jaws, you know it's a shark, and Spielberg gives you the suspense of the dorsal fin, or, you know, being dragged underwater, then water and blood shoot up, and so you never know what's going to happen. Not Roger Corman. He's like, fuck it. 4 minutes into the movie, some dude gets chopped in half by a crab pincher.
He knew what people were paying to see, Ryan.
Yep. And this film is like, it's definitely an atomic monster film done on a small budget. And there's like a part where one of the giant crabs breaks into the cabin the hero and the heroine are staying in, and the guy's trying to fight up this like giant crab claw, like a King Kong hand going through. And did I mention too that the crabs can also telepathically use the voice of the victims they've already killed to lure people to their den to kill them?
That's how crabs operate today, Ryan.
I didn't say that part. Yeah, that's what they also do. But there is some sort of charm to a really low budget, like, monster movie. And there's a great mini documentary on the disc about Roger Corman and all the people he helped. So there's interviews with Joe Dante and all these really great directors who came up through working with him, and how he tricked people into working for him for $100 a week.
did they interview Ron Howard on that at all?
No.
Okay. Have you ever heard what there's an amazing story that Ron Howard told about directing Grand Theft Auto for Roger? There was a scene where they had to get extras. And so Howard went to him and goes like, we need more extras to fill this space. And Roger went, no, I can't do it. Don't have the money. And Ron Howard's disappointed. And Roger says, look, if you finish this film, you'll never have to work for me ever again.
And that's what he does. I mean, a lot of directors, James Cameron got his start there, too. He did another classic, Piranha 2, The Spawning. So
yeah. Scorsese got his start with him with Boxcar Bertha. Jonathan Demme wrote a bunch of those women in prison films for him.
It was only $14 and it was really fun. There's a commentary on it that I'll watch again and listen to the commentary because it's only like 65 minutes long. So it goes by really fast. And I will say too, Scream Factory did a really great job on the restoration. The film looks impeccable.
I think it was shot yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, I can literally see the strings pulling the crab's arms and stuff. So,
But that's the charm. It's like seeing the strings on the Only Angels Have Wings planes, you know, like it's part of the charm.
Yeah. And I totally got it because the poster is really badass. It's a crab holding a woman in a bikini. Like it's brilliant.
Love it.
Next week we are seeing Gladiator 2. That should be fun. I'm always down for a Ridley Scott film. Zach and Corinne, thanks for joining us on this episode of Real Nerds Podcast.
Of course. Yeah, we're happy
to join you next week for Gladiator 2.
I'll come for Gladiator 2. I'll be entertained.
Will you?
I don't know, actually. I'm kind of worried tomorrow. Like, because I rewatched the first Gladiator not too long ago, and I'm like, does this need a part two?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen the first Gladiator in a while, but I feel like of the people I've talked to who have and then saw the sequel recently, they didn't like it. Like, maybe rewatching the first one made the second one seem worse by comparison.
I'm mostly excited for Denzel Washington and whatever the hell he's doing in that movie. I'm excited.
I mean, in my opinion, he's the best part of the movie.
Okay, gotcha.
I mean, the Gladiator ain't got shit on him.
Wow. That was
really lame. Thanks
Zach
for listening.
Level joke right there.
Yeah, how dare you stoop to my level, Ryan?
Punch yourself in the face for that one.
Okay.
Smack. All right.
Until next week, we'll see you at the movies.
Bye.
Keep it real, nerds.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot a real nerd. Can follow the plot of a real nerd. Look at all the gods. Lights, camera, action.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it.